You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Australia's Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. As we go to air tonight, Macophiles from around the world are converging on their equivalent of Mecca, the annual Apple Worldwide Developers Conference held in San Francisco. In just 8 hours' time, the event's keynote speaker will address the throng of the Apple faithful. So if you just can't wait to hear what's in store this year, keep an eye on macworld.com. But if you want the news and gossip as it happens, then Twitter is the place for you. Back home here in Australia this week, did you know that it's National E-Security Week? The annual National E-Security Awareness Week, which is a federal government initiative, aims to raise awareness about the importance of e-security amongst Australians. This year, the week is being held from the 5th to the 12th of June and aims to help inform home users, students and small businesses about the simple steps they can take to protect themselves, their families and their businesses online. A range of events and activities are being held around Australia in metropolitan, remote and regional areas to help Australians understand e-security risks. There are simple tips being promoted throughout the week to help Australians use the internet in a secure and confident manner, including getting a better, stronger password and changing it at least twice a year, getting security software and updating and patching it regularly, stopping and thinking before you click on links or attachments from unknown sources, and information is valuable. Be careful about what you give away about yourself and others online. Tonight, the panel will give you their tips for a safer online world for you and yours, the do's and don'ts when it comes to social networking, as well as email, and physical security, such as what should be between you and the world of cyberspace. Every city in the world has places you wouldn't want to go, and cyberspace is no different.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The Commonwealth Bank is up to pussy's bow in hoax emails. Adam surfs the Google wave, and it seems good. The amazing world of controller-free video games is here. Acer to offer Google's Android operating system on netbooks. And allegedly, Australian employees waste time on social networking. Oh, say it's not true. First up, though, change your password while you catch up with the latest happenings in the world of technology for this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Optus calls for the breakup of Telstra. Microsoft's new search engine, Bing, has a unique way of handling adult content. The Rudd government has now spent $44.5 million on internet filtering, and Microsoft announces a Windows 7 release date. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Commonwealth Bank customers are being inundated with phishing attacks sent by cyber criminals seeking to steal passwords and credit card details. Commonwealth Bank spokesman Mr. Steve Batten said the bank was working closely with the Australian Federal Police and the Australian High-Tech Crime Centre to track down the scammers. However, Mr. Batten said that the bank appears to be losing the war. The scam emails, which look authentic and include the Commonwealth Bank's logo, try to trick the victim into handing over sensitive information in various ways. For example, by telling them that they need to unlock an account or activate a card, claim a refund, update internet banking details, view an important security message, or even to complete a survey in exchange for payment. When the victim clicks on the link in the email, the victim is either infected with a password-stealing virus or presented with an official-looking web page that asks the customer to enter details, which are then harvested by the fraudsters. In a new variation on the traditional phishing attack, which usually asks victims to click on a malicious link, one Commonwealth Bank scam email asks customers to call a Queensland phone number in order to redeem a $500 cashback bonus. If you have inadvertently responded to a hoax email, the Commonwealth Bank is advising customers to immediately change their PIN at any Commonwealth Bank ATM or branch. For more information, visit combank.com.au/security-privacy and select the hoax emails link. Optus has released its submission to the government's review of telecommunications regulation, calling for Telstra to be broken up into separate network-owning and retail service-providing entities, and for Telstra to be forced to divest its 50% stake in Foxtel. Mr. Maha Krishnapali, Optus's Director of Government and Corporate Affairs, said that Telstra routinely discriminates against wholesale customers, discrimination which is prohibited by regulations. In brief, Optus says Telstra should be required to establish a separate access service company that is structurally and functionally separated from its retail businesses. It should be owned and operated as an independent entity from the current Telstra retail businesses with its own board and management team. This company should hold the current fixed line network assets and provide services to all access seekers, including Telstra retail. Microsoft's new search engine, Bing.com, has a strange attitude towards sex. In Australia, the United States and Europe, any Bing user can search for sex and receive thousands of results. Using a unique new feature, users can access explicit videos without leaving the search results page. While child advocacy groups are outraged at the possibilities of the feature, other countries are unable to access any racy content on the new search engine, which is a pre-release version. If the user indicates that they are from India, China, or an Arabian country, searches for sex return a blank page with a warning, which reads, "The search sex may return sexually explicit content. To get results, change your search terms." In Australia, Bing has a safe search filter that allows people to keep inappropriate content out of their search results, which by default is set to moderate. Microsoft also allows people to report offensive content displayed in Bing search results. The Rudd government's internet censorship policy will cost about $90,000 per blocked web address to implement, and the government has admitted it has not developed any criteria to determine whether trials of the scheme are a success. The opposition, Greens, and online users lobby group, the EFA, or Electronic Frontiers Australia, are concerned the lack of success criteria is a sign the policy itself has no clear goals and is instead being dictated by what the technology will allow. 9 ISPs are trialling the web censorship plan, which will have a mandatory block of all content that has been refused classification by the Australian Communications and Media Authority. Results of the trials are due to be published in July, but in response to a Freedom of Information request, the government has admitted that there are no success criteria as such. EFA spokesman Mr. Colin Jacobs said the pilot seems to have been a political exercise in deflecting criticism. Without any benchmarks, the government can claim it was a success, regardless of the cost or performance issues that ISPs have encountered. And during a keynote address at Computex 2009 in Taipei last week, Microsoft's OEM division corporate vice president Mr. Steve Guggenheimer revealed that the company is confident with the progress of Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 Release 2. As a result, Microsoft will deliver release to manufacturing code to business partners in the second half of July. Windows 7 will become gradually available on the 22nd of October 2009, and Windows Server 2008 R2 will also be broadly available. At this time, Microsoft has not disclosed pricing for the new operating system. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
ASIO, you know them.
Oh, yes.
Apart from the fact that they're following Adam Turner on Twitter, which is interesting.
Run and hide, Adam.
How much battery life is taken by the battery monitor app?
But that's what Microsoft are saying that Bing's going to do, that sort of thing.
How's your nanotechnology?
Are you talking about the handset or the operating system?
I'd go into the iMate maintenance depot to get things fixed. It would take them more than months. They just never responded to any problems.
Does that surprise anybody, or is television really that bad in Australia?
Television is that bad in Australia.
It could actually be generating spurious interference to other and causing interference to other services.
It runs at 850 megahertz frequency, so you could use it with Telstra, but you won't get the next G speed.
Live Search, previously known as... Yes, Microsoft just keep changing the name of their search engine.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome, one and all, to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. You're listening to three of us this evening, Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham, and my good self. So welcome aboard wherever you might be listening to us. You can join us live online on chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And Dr. Ron, the stream, the video streaming stuff?
The video stream is starting. As I click the start broadcast button right now, go to ustream.tv/techtalkradioau and click on the follow this show link and you'll see us there.
Fantastic.
It is. It's exciting.
So it's been an interesting week this week in a lot of respects.
Oh, winter's here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Melbourne is now the home of swine flu.
Yes.
Don't come here. We have too many pigs in our town.
We have that dubious honour, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Over 1,000 or something I was hearing today, so...
I hear that school kids from New South Wales are flocking to Victoria because they get a week off school when they go back.
Yeah, and they're having swine flu parties. Did you hear about this?
Oh, no.
What happens is they come down here and they have a party with someone who's got the disease, so they get it to build up their immunity system. I don't know whether the health service would recommend that, but nonetheless, thought it was quite humorous on the radio. Anyway, welcome aboard wherever you're listening to us. Hello, New Zealanders. You're listening to us live in Magic up there in the North Island of New Zealand. Join us on the chat if you're still awake.
Hello, Kiwi people.
We're actually... They'll be lying in bed listening to their transistor radios, the clock radios on the bedside table there in New Zealand as we speak.
That would
is
be.
Is that right?
Yeah, what, it's late
it,
over
it's
there.
10 o'clock over there, is it?
Yeah.
10:15 now.
Yeah. And then you move up to Queensland. Well, they're listening to us a few days after.
Okay.
And... yeah, all the other states on a bit delayed from
everybody where listens at a different time, don't they?
It does. Now, before we do Coro, I'm going to start off with the Coro this week. Thank you to that person, and you know who you are, who sent us an email saying the podcast was wrong. I'm traditionally the only person who can stuff up a podcast, and I wasn't on podcast duty this week.
No.
And as a result, I'm going, uh-oh, what's going on here?
Yeah. we had an issue with the podcast last week, didn't we?
We did. We did. There was a delayed uploading, wasn't there?
Wasn't so much that it was wrong. It just wasn't there on time.
A little birdie told me someone fell asleep during...
I was going to put a spin on it and say that we had a failure of a critical piece of equipment, but yes.
Yeah, the operator.
The fact is I woke up that morning with my headphones still on my head and the impression of the keyboard and my forehead and the podcast still not done in front of me, so...
Bugger.
And my email mailbox was cluttering up with lots of emails going, where is it?
Sorry,
see,
guys.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway,
I'd had a long, long day.
Yes. It's all good. All good. Dr. Ron, Coro?
There is. There's always Coro. Yes. And if you'd like to chat to us live while we're actually on air, you can go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And I've just logged in there. I think the other guys are logging in there as well. You can come and join the cast of thousands that are with us tonight. Tech Junkie asks, hey, fellas, hate to be a pain, but could you please set your show's podcast genre to podcast?
Yeah, I think I did that.
Apropos of what we were just talking about?
Yes.
I did that in the MP3s that I uploaded.
Did you? Yeah, and I did that in the category section of the RSS feed generatory thing that I use.
Oh, good. So it should be looked after.
Hopefully
then.
That'll be working now.
All right, Tech Junkie, let us know if it's still an issue. Brian writes, here's an idea for Monday's show, bing.com. We were talking about Bing, which is the new Microsoft search engine.
We were, weren't we?
Now, yes, we were. Bing.com doesn't actually link to discoverbing.com, says Brian. How am I supposed to... Now, he's got an interesting point here about maps. Maps takes you to maps.live.com.au. If you zoom to view Victoria, click the fuel picks link at the bottom and see that there's 5 petrol stations listed and 160 McDonald's stores
on
the map.
I saw that email come through.
So what he's talking about is if you click on the maps link, there's a little button down the bottom that says... there's a show these business locations on the map link, and there's a fuel picks button. And the fuel picks button has a little Golden Arches logo beside it. And for every fuel stop, when you click on that fuel links button, there's about 30 McDonald's stores. He wants to know if it's proudly sponsored by...
You reckon they paid for it, did you?
That family restaurant, I don't know. But you can't buy fuel from that many McDonald's stores, surely.
Well, I don't know. Out there in the rural side of things, aren't they all together? You know, you'd... Those big things on the side of the freeways and the highways where you drive in left and get fuel for your car and fuel for the kids at the same time?
Well, potentially. I don't know.
Maybe they're one and the same these days.
Let us know if you're using same or if you haven't had a look at Bing yet. Go to bing.com and have a look at their maps feature. See what it looks like. Now, I think that's all the Coro I had at this point in time, Andrew. But if you've got some feedback for us, send it to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
All righty. Yes, lots to talk about on the show tonight, including, obviously, the fallout in the United States of the American tech podcast. A bit of a train wreck over there. Apparently, it's not akin to what happened on Channel 9 here last night with a certain chef and a host of a television program.
A celebrity chef and a celebrity current affairs journalist.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that we're all straight in here. And yes. all the contra stuff. Anyway, we'll talk about that very shortly. Just in relation to Bing before we move on, I must admit this, I've had mixed feelings, mixed reservations. Maybe I'm still getting used to how it works. I was chatting to Lyd in the United States the other day, and she was saying there's a lot more of Bing over there than there is over here. For example, the shopping options where you can compare different prices around the place. I've yet to work out, maybe it's what I've been entering in, but I haven't managed to get all the comparative shopping that Bing allegedly dishes up to you. But during the course of the week, and reading about some of the interesting ways Bing filters search requests, Dr. Ron, you were saying this evening that you were doing some tests, and what were the results of those? Were you happy with the way it delivered information to you?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking before the show about the video previews and audio previews, and how you've actually got a little thumbnail that comes up in the results, which is a bit. It's not quite the same as the way other search engines return the search results that we're used to.
I'm just going to Bing, and it comes up Bing Beta. They've obviously been following the Google line of things.
Bing Beta, yes.
So what would you type in if you're looking for a video type sort of stuff? Like, would it be like a show title or just a general search on...
Well, the one that we were talking about in the news was to do with adult content, and this is what's created a bit of a ruckus, especially amongst child advocacy groups who have said that they don't like the way this feature works. There is actually a safe search feature. So if you search for something like as broad as the word sex, if you type that in, you should get a warning to say that safe search is enabled at the moment, and there's an adult content.
Yeah, it does. Top right-hand corner, it says 1.7 million results, and it says safe search moderate.
That's the one. So yeah. If you say...
So it's defaulted on.
It has defaulted on, which is good. If you turn that off, for example, I wouldn't recommend doing it with the volume turned on your laptop just at the moment.
No, it's muted.
It's good. But you'll get all of the search results will be returned, and you can look at videos, for example, and yeah, everything's returned there as thumbnails, and you can just wave your mouse pointer across the thumbnails and everything just automatically starts playing. So it makes a lot of content very accessible. The child advocacy groups have got issues about the accessibility of particular types of content.
Now, does this index YouTube and things like that, like all the videos that are up there? Because that's a Google domain. But let's say, for example, you're searching for a how-to on setting up a router or something like that for your home network.
This would be a good question for Lyd, because I'm not sure exactly how the search engines index things on networks like YouTube. But they do index them, but it must be based on something like user rating or number of hits.
I think the Google video search returns lots of videos from other video providers other than YouTube.
So does it?
I think you get things on the Windows Live site and other things. So,
I've just put in how to set up a router. It hasn't given me any video options or anything like that. So, but I guess there's stuff out there. But yeah, look, I guess we're all just getting used to it a little bit. And obviously, there's a few traps for young players along the lines of what you were just discussing there, Dr. Ron.
Indeed. So, early days yet though for Bing.
Have you used it? As in, for a legit search, or you've just been playing with
it? No, I've only been playing with it. I've only been testing, so I haven't actually used it to do any legitimate searches yet. I did notice that they had announced a mobile version. I don't know if we spoke about that last week or not.
We did. I think JD tried to pull it up on his phone and got redirected to Live Search, the old search site. But obviously, since then, they've enabled a live version, a mobile version of Bing.
I'll try it. If you'd go to M... for mobile.
m.bing.com.
And just have a look. Graham's going to try it now while we're talking on the wireless here, but I'll give it a try a little bit later in the break too and see what comes up, whether we actually go to a native mobile Bing site or still go to the live site. It'll be interesting to see.
All right. Did you know this week is National E-Security Awareness Week?
Only in passing.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little bit
underwhelmed by the whole effort.
Sort of stumbled across it. More by chance than anything else. Like, it's not as if... in fact, Senator Conroy sent me an email telling me about it because I'm subscribed to his press releases.
Yeah, I got a Senator Conroy email too, I think.
And that was how I found out about it. But I haven't seen anything in the mainstream on the television or on the radio, yet there's radio ads being made for it. But yeah, it's probably not a bad idea. But this is probably what's doing the rounds at the moment. See if this rings a bell.
It's National E-Security Awareness Week. This week, do one simple thing to protect yourself online. Get a better, stronger password. For more information and advice, visit www.staysmartonline.gov.au.
Yeah, get a new password. Have you got one? Have you set your password lately? In fact, we should talk about this. How do you, in this day of
having... I don't
know
if I want to talk about this. I don't know if I know what... I want people to know what my password changing habits are,
but
as the case may be.
But even still, in these days of Commonwealth Bank, emails and things like that, how do you store all your passwords? Because if you're like me and you log on to dozens, and I mean a lot of websites, do you have a common email for them? How do you do it? How do you record them? I know that some people in the office have a secret men's book. Not me, but some do. And they write all their passwords down on a piece of paper. I thought, oh, that's an interesting concept.
I generally resist the urge to write passwords down. The way I remember them is by not using the save password feature on a lot of things. So that it forces me to key them in every time I use them, and that way that helps them to stick.
Mm-hmm.
I have a low security password that I use in a few different places.
What do you mean that low security? What one that you don't care about really?
Well, I do care, but they're less important. So things like for Hotmail and for Twitter, a few things like that.
Yeah, things that aren't really sort of too detrimental to your person if something goes wrong.
Yeah, the things that are not critical. But for, say, logging into the office network and logging into the online banking and all those, I have stronger passwords. Now, not that the low security one isn't strong. It's a strong password, but it's used across multiple sites, which weakens it just by the way it's used.
I was listening too on the radio that someone was talking about it here the other day about how to choose a password.
And it's a difficult thing.
It is a difficult thing, and a couple of talkback callers rang up and suggested the old fashioned, porn name that you have, your first name, your pet, and followed by your street name with a few upper and lower cases and things. And I thought, well, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, the recommendation is not to use anything that's related to the site you're accessing or biographical information of any kind, like streets you live in, anything related to names, names of relatives, names of kids, parents, names of pets. Leave all that stuff out because that stuff's easy enough to find. All you got to do is go to your Facebook page and it's all there.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a Facebook page.
Well...
Others do, I know.
But, yeah, that's
you
right.
You do. You don't know it, but you do.
Yes.
Are you the one?
Somebody you've talked to knows this
stuff. Talk about that after the show.
That's just the way of the internet. That stuff's easy to find out. It's easier to find out than you think. Even if you think you've never told anybody, trust me, they know. So leave all that stuff out. The best, and you've got to make sure it involves, it's not a word that's going to appear in word lists. Even if it's a word that wouldn't be in the dictionary, if it's a word that gets used out there, it'll be on the word list. People use it, even common misspellings of words. So don't go down that track. Pick something like a family saying, something quite obscure, something that's
most of our family sayings are obscenities without wanting to give too much away. But
well,
I know what you're saying.
But be that as it may, and don't use the whole phrase, use the first letters of each word or the first and last letters of each word.
Yeah.
Of a long phrase or a couple of lines from a song that's significant to you or something like that.
And capitalise the first word or capitalise a few.
Capitalise some letters somewhere. Use some numerals in there somewhere. Use some punctuation in there somewhere.
Yep.
And, you've got yourself a relatively strong password. But make sure it's long enough, though, because if it's less than about, 8 or 9 or 10 characters, then people can brute force it.
So that's the dilemma, Graham. We've chosen our password, which is...
Yep.
Now, how do we store it? And how do you actually keep track of these things? Because let me tell you, I've got so many different sites that I go to that need a password these days. Apart from your social networking sites, as you alluded to earlier, you've also got your banking sites, which traditionally they give you the passwords, not you put them in.
Well, they should let you change them.
But anyway, how do you store them? Like, if you don't write them down and you don't use the save password thingy, that's good for radio, as
he says, tapping his head.
Pointing his head, yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad. So I'm looking at you now and I'm thinking you must have a couple of good passwords that you use on a lot of sites. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, how do you vary them from site to site? I don't mean to put you on the spot, Graham, but this is the dilemma that, and this is the point that I'm trying to highlight, is that this is how hard passwords and saving them are. And then and the government's come out today, and I'm right behind what they're saying, change your password. You might as well do your smoke alarm at the same time.
Yeah.
But, you know, change it. And you think, oh, God, I don't have to remember it all over again.
A new one. Yeah, I know. But don't fall into the trap of saving it. Make sure that you... You know, leave the save password box unticked so you key it in every time. That way you'll remember it. What else can you do? You write down the clue rather than the password itself. Might be one way to go in your little black book. And the other thing is, for some things, if you really do have trouble, you know, save it in a place, but save it in a place that's secure. Save it in a place where if you open that, someone can't get access to it. It's not in a book that someone can just read that's sitting right beside your computer when you're not there.
A lot of the time, your web browser has the facility to be able to store a password when you go to a particular site, and you don't realize how much you rely on that until you go to a computer you don't normally use, or you rebuild your computer,
yep.
or for some reason you clear all of the stored passwords words from your web browser,
yep.
and you go, oh, damn, what's the password for this site? I usually just go there and it logs me on.
Well, that's what Graham was saying. Yeah.
Don't use that. Because otherwise you'll never remember your passwords.
Yep, and it's not safe either. If someone comes up to your computer, they can use it as if they were you.
And just, by the way, and this is specifically addressed to some of my customers as well as everybody else out there, please don't write your username and password on the same post-it note and then stick it to your monitor.
Now, there was someone in the chat room just said that before. You should write all your passwords on yellow sticky notes and just stick it all on your screen. So, you know, poor Graham.
Anyway, when I find them, I take them off the monitors and I screw them up and I throw them away.
But it is a modern-day conundrum, passwords, because we have so many of them. Other things that the government is suggesting that we do this week is obviously get security software, which we should all have, whether you're on a Mac or on a PC, and update it and patch it regularly, which I'll hear Graham saying, yes, you've got to do that. So
Yes, you've got to do that.
Exactly. Stop and think before you click on links or attachments from unknown sources, especially from, as someone said in the chat before, combank.com.au.au. Don't click on that one. In fact,
I'd challenge you on that.
Would you?
Yep. Well, stop and think before you do anything, but stop and think before you click on links and attachments, even if they come from known sources, perhaps even especially if they come from known sources.
That's a very good point, because I did get an email during the course of the week from someone who I knew, and it just had a JPEG in it, and I've gone, whoa. Because they're the dodgy ones when you just get a picture with a JPEG.
Step back a bit and think about how this works. The bad guys have infected somebody's computer. Okay, they've installed something there that sends out email to everybody containing...
That one in there, I'm just pointing to.
Sorry,
I didn't mean
I'm
to distract you.
I'm wondering whether that's something I'm supposed to be taking notice of. Andrew's making hand signals there, but they're top secret, so that's all right. Someone's infected the bad guy. Infected a computer. They've got access to their address book. It's somebody you know. Everybody in that address book is somebody you know, or somebody that someone you know knows. You know, they're friends and friends of friends. Their names you're going to recognise. Okay, and that's where they're going to come from.
Yeah, if I get an email from Graham Callaghan that says, "Hi Ron, just want to update your details. Can you click on this link for me?"
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right. That's from Graham. It'll be safe.
But the clue there is that that's not the sort of email I'm likely to send.
It's definitely not
the
sort of email.
Well, in fact, clue one there is that it's an email for me, which is rare in itself.
Ring Andrew.
We won't go there.
Hey, Graham just sent me an email. Andrew would say, oh, really? What does it say? I don't know. I haven't opened it yet. It's very exciting.
Not wanting to speak out of school. I actually got three from him in the space of an hour this evening. So
really?
Anyway.
Three?
Yeah.
I don't even remember sending two.
Oh, there you go. Maybe one was fraudulent, wasn't it?
Oh, there you go.
Dr. Ron, I know you've got a good policy, and I guess for those of us who have our own, even ISP, I guess these days, offer you a collection of email addresses which can be used and recycled. And obviously the one which is potentially the one near and dearest to your heart, that is your personal name at your domain name, don't give that out to everybody. Keep that one to yourself, or give that to your family and friends and things like that, so you'll be able to tell when their machine gets infected, because then it'll start being spammed. But use those emails that you can get. Like, I think a lot of ISPs give you 5 just by signing up with them, don't they?
They do, and they also give you the opportunity to change them. So if you're not using them all, or you've used one or two of them for a particular purpose.
When they start getting spam, change them.
Yep,
delete them.
Absolutely, change them for sure. I'm probably a little bit eccentric, and I've got my own mail server because I run my own business at home, but I can very easily add an alias, which means I can just make up an email address on the spur of the moment. So if I want to subscribe to a particular service or I want to register to access a particular website, I can just invent an email address on the spot. I can put it in an aliases file and I can log on with that. And that way, if I want to, it's like a disposable email address. But there are services which provide that. If you go to sites like Sneak Email and what's another one, Graham? Like
Mailinator.
Mailinator.
I use Mailinator all the time.
Yep, absolutely.
That's a fantastic service. It means that if you've got any form of reservation about putting your email address into a form online, use Mailinator because it gives you a free email address for all of about, what, half an hour or something like that?
Yep. Adam Turner in our chat room says Fastmail is also good for creating aliases. So there's a lot of free ones out there. And you can just, what you're essentially doing is creating a disposable email address, and you can use that for as long as you need to. And if it starts attracting spam or you don't need it anymore, just delete it and move on.
Mm. Bear in mind that Mailinator is not secure. I don't know about the other ones you've mentioned, but yeah, anyone can.
But you don't need it.
Mail there. That's right.
If you're putting those dodgy things in, it's just because you're signing up to a form to get a download traditionally. That's what I use it for.
Yeah. And it may not need to be secure. That's right.
And it doesn't need to be all bells and whistles.
Yeah, but
it,
you need to be aware of that. Don't use it for something
that should
be secure.
The funny thing is, I use the same one on Mailinator each time I go in there, and I keep logging in, and I have to sift through the spam to that one to actually get to the message that I want. So it's obviously working, or else someone else is using the same one that I'm using. But anyway.
Well, that's possible.
All right, so there you go. There's a bit of a rundown on eSecurity Awareness Week here in Australia for June the 5th to the 12th. So change your password or passwords, as it may be. The other interesting thing, which they made a notation here, which I think you also touched on briefly before, Graham, too, is just be really careful about the information you give out about yourself and others on social networking sites, such as Facebook and, what's the other one, MySpace?
MyFace and FriendFeed and all that good
all
stuff.
Those. Yeah.
Alrighty, so there you go, there you have it. It's well worth having a bit of a think about, and of course, don't leave easy passwords out there. Like if you're a mad, keen, avid Richmond footballer, don't have your password as the last time the Tigers won the flag. Have they won one? Anyway, let's not go there.
But yeah, people will know that you're a Richmond fan and people will try those sorts of passwords.
Yeah, yeah. And your dog's name and your mother's name and all that sort of stuff. The Rudd government's...
Particularly if your dog's name's Tiger.
Yes. The Rudd government's internet censorship policy will cost around $90,000 per blocked web address to implement. That's not bad, is it?
That's funny. That's a funny stat.
Isn't it a doozer? That's a good way of putting it.
You can do anything with statistics.
So far, they've...
even tell the truth.
Well, yeah, exactly. So far, the government spent allegedly $44.5 million on internet filtering. Go, Mr. Conroy. He's doing very well.
Mm.
Which, if you divide that across the number of URLs in the ACMA's blacklist, equals around $90,000 per URL to block. Good statistic, don't you think?
The opposition communications spokesman, Senator the Honourable Nick Minchin, said, "This exposes a major shortcoming in the government's approach." They're concerned that there's no assessment criteria as such, so they're not going to know. There's no mechanism by which the ACMA can determine how successful the trial has been and if it has been a value for money exercise.
Yeah, $90,000 per URL. That's not bad.
Well, I think that was one of Sanfi's tricks. Don't write the success or fail criteria until after the trial's been completed.
Yes.
They haven't walked away from it yet? No? Okay. I think Optus joined in the other day too, just to slow things down a bit more. Speaking of Optus, you know how Sol Trujillo left the country the other day and sort of put all sorts of racist...
He wasn't with Optus, he was with the other mob.
No, exactly right. But Optus has come out and said there's no racism in Australia, just because they want to be worlds apart. Well, you know, that's what they do. Telstra says there is, Optus says there isn't. Labor says there is, isn't. Yeah, you know, right across the spectrum about any topic, political.
Rose-coloured glasses.
Exactly. All right, in other interesting news, Acer to offer Google's Android operating system on netbooks. Now, Dr. Ron,
Yay,
you'd be happy about this, won't you?
Because
you have a netbook sitting here on the studio in front of us.
Got a couple.
Small new netbook computers from Acer will come with Google's Android operating system if the buyer desires, instead of the incumbent's one, that is Microsoft. The move by Acer, the world's third largest PC maker, could raise Android's chances of becoming a widely used alternative to Windows on mobile computing. Does it do...
Oh, okay.
Does it do Google... what's the location thing? I can't think of
it. Latitude.
That's it. Latitude? Maybe it does.
It'll do all of that. I saw some screenshots of a netbook running. I don't know if they were mocked up or if they were real, but it looked pretty cool. I was trying to think if Android as an operating system would give me everything I would need on a laptop or a netbook. I was thinking...
On a netbook, maybe, well, but a laptop I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, if you're only wanting to be...
It's very lightweight.
It is. But if you're only wanting to be web browsing, sending messages, integrating with Gmail, Google Calendar, maybe that's all, everything's there that you need. And
how
so
quick,
fast,
that,
very fast.
That's
to
what I was
going to
say.
Run.
How quick does that boot up? Like, you're running Windows what on that at the moment, as he points to Dr. Ron's EEE PC in the studio.
These are running a flavour of XP.
Are they? And how long does it take to boot?
Oh, a minute or so, 90 seconds, maybe.
Okay, so you'd cut that down by a phenomenal rate if you just loaded up something like Android on it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it would. It'd be very fast. Hmm. Very fast. Especially if you had all the processor power that comes in one of these. When you compare it with a mobile device,
yeah,
I think it'd be super fast. It'd probably be really good. Graham doesn't look like he's convinced.
No.
We'd have to see it. We'd have to load it up and give it a go.
Yeah. Oh, wait and see what happens. Because Android, originally designed for mobile phones, is freely distributed by Google, netbooks running the software would cost less. And that's according to Acer's chief executive.
Well, you wouldn't have to pay for an operating system.
Absolutely. All done in that wonderful language that's free to use. Now, in other interesting news, when this came across my desk, I had to laugh, and then I stopped and thought about it a little bit, and I said, maybe there's some truth in the rumours to this. Australian employees waste time on social networks. New figures show that Australian employees are spending too much on social networking sites, chattering to friends through instant messaging programs instead of doing work. Is this another form of wilfing?
I was just chatting to someone on Twitter. What?
didn't we have a survey not long ago that said exactly the opposite?
Oh, I love surveys.
That people who use these things are more productive employees?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We did. And now they've gone full circle and go, oh, maybe not.
Yeah.
New research undertaken by, of all groups, Telstra and a security group called Message Labs shows that the number of times employees have blocked access to social networking sites has jumped from 2,000 per day 10 months ago to currently 6,000 attempts per day.
Okay.
So, and I must admit,
I think what they're saying is that employers are getting more gung-ho about blocking them, not that they're actually costing people a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess being an ISP such as Telstra, who would have a fairly good snapshot of what the community's doing based on URL requests through their network, they may be seeing sort of corporations versus or business accounts not allowing access to some of these URLs. But the research also showed that a number of URLs blocked by companies has increased by 193% since January this year, with the majority of those URLs being social networking sites.
Yeah, because employers are afraid of this sort of stuff. They think that that's what people are going to do.
Mm.
They think that people are going to waste their time.
Yeah, well, if it's not on a social networking site, wouldn't it not be on a telephone? Like, what's the difference these days? Because I know I have young people who work in the office with me, and they don't use the phone to talk like you and I would use to talk to. Like, I'd ring Dr. Ron, or I'd ring you, or I'd ring whoever to talk to him. And you sit back and you put your feet up and you have a 10-minute break. What's the difference between that and doing instant messaging?
Well, very little, I would have thought.
That's what I would have thought too.
Yeah.
So, but this is just the generational gap we're seeing between the young or the younger.
I think this is people yet again trying to use the technology to solve a problem that's a human problem, not a technology problem. You know, blocking certain websites and other people are going to. If people are determined not to do work and they're going to waste time, they're going to waste time anyway. They're going to, as you say, move to their mobile phone or go to a different site or, you know, sit there and read the paper or something instead of doing their job. You know, the people who are valuable employees who are keen to do their jobs are going to do their jobs anyway. And probably they're going to do their jobs and do their social networking and get, you know, more done in a day anyway.
And be as productive.
Unless you're a disgruntled employee, then you're in trouble. From an employer's point of view.
Well, again, that's still a human problem. That's still not a technological problem.
And there's nothing going to stop them from doing whatever they do, whether they do it on staff, sanctioned equipment, or on their mobile phones, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, Graham Callaghan in this evening talking about all things technology. Come and join us in our chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Did we not pay the power bill? My screen's gone off and I can't get it back on. in other news before we go to a break, the ACCC is trying to give competition in this country, that is the non-Telstra people, some level of assurance that just because we've got fibre to the node coming along, that the copper's going to be here for a little bit longer. Because I think we alluded to this earlier on in the show, probably a couple of months back, that what's to stop people sitting on the fence now and not putting D-slams into telephone exchanges and rolling out technology until this fibre to the home arrives.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Why would you put in the infrastructure for the current system when you know there's something bigger and better coming along? But
people were bemoaning the potential cost of the NBN if they were going to be subscribers, that it might actually be 2 or 3 times the cost of what they're paying now to access. But
no doubt on day one it will be.
No doubt on day one it will be. But if people are happy with the technology, with the ADSL technology they're using now, or the cable technology they're using now, there's no reason why they can't continue to pay what they're paying now and keep using that technology. I think the DSLAMs
and the price of the fibre will come down as, you know, it gets more use.
Of course it will. Yep.
And people will move. There were people who didn't want to give up their dial-up because that was fast enough for them. All they needed was their emails.
I was about to say exactly the same thing, Graham. I mean, dial-up's still in place now, and sadly there are still dial-up plans which people can purchase now. And we'll be at 10 years' time. Hopefully we'll be saying, sadly, there are still ADSL plans that people can purchase. But no, ADSL will be here for a long time to come, though. It'll still be here in 10 years' time.
I wonder who's going to be providing it, though, if the fibre rolls in. But then, I guess, as you say, price is everything, isn't it?
Well, if Optus gets its way, anybody will be able to use it, because they had a big moan during the week, didn't they, calling for Telstra to get broken up into separate retail arms and network provision arms. And so
I think even Telstra at one point were making noises about wanting to offload the copper network anyway.
Yeah, well, separation, my friend. It's coming. Optus, as we said in the news today, Optus want to split everything, get rid of the Foxtel link to them, get rid of the retail and wholesale, which is probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, well,
we've been saying
that sort of thing for a while, haven't we? That, yes, the networks that provide the content should be separate from the content that's provided.
Yep.
Very good. Oh, look at the time. Boy, we can talk tonight. Before we go to the break, there's two more things I want to talk briefly about, three actually. Have you guys heard of the new Xbox 360, which is made, it's a game console made by Microsoft, this new Natal program that they're doing at the moment? I came across this, once again, when I was having my chat to Lid in Silicon Valley during the course of the week. She said, have you seen this? And I've gone, nah. Anyway, she sent me to a few links. Would you believe that the new Xbox 360, when it comes out, will basically not have a controller anymore? It's all done via movement, and it's just that. You interact by turning an imaginary steering wheel, and you do all those sorts of things with it. And I thought, you're kidding me, aren't you? Anyway, of course, if you do the searches and float around on YouTube and some of the new blogs, you'll actually see this technology in use.
Okay, I was just looking around for a calendar. It's not the 1st of April, is it?
No. It's a healthy level of cynicism you have there, Dr. Graham. And yeah, I was thinking along the same lines until I actually saw it on YouTube, one of the big demonstrations there that they did recently. So I thought, yeah. And at this point in time, finally, I'm happy to get a video game for the kids, because they're not going to be sitting on their bottoms all day exercising their thumbs. They'll actually be doing, you know, kung fu moves and left, right, and jumping up and down, and even...
The kids will work out the minimum necessary amount of movement to trigger the response they want.
Well, maybe so, but then again, if you have kids like mine, they'll be bouncing off the wall. They're like red cordial and jelly beans in their legs all the time anyway.
They'll just be using their eyebrows to move left or right, and they'll be wiggling their little toes to the fire and eject.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because it can actually sample objects in the room. It knows you can do your own avatar, and it becomes aware. You can put your own head, all those sorts of things. Anyway, watch this space. The Xbox 360 coming out very shortly with the new Natal, I'm not sure how they're going to pronounce it, game controllers, which basically is no game controller.
The world has gone mad.
Also on the demo, which I thought was really good, was the game shows. Because I know, Dr. Ron, you like playing game shows on your PlayStation 2,
don't you?
Well, the game shows with Natal,
Buzz Quiz,
lets you do the same thing. You can actually...
Well, what do you punch?
You clap your hands like that, and it says, Dr. Ron, what's the answer? Because it knows you.
But how does it differentiate my clap from your clap?
It knows you because of your movement. It knows your facial. It knows your... It scans you. Yeah, this is the scary part about it. So, and then it's just, anyway, go and have a look. It's all, coming. Watch this space. All right. Now, I'm going to throw it over to you, Dr. Ron. There was an interesting thing during the course of the week in relation to the Twitch broadcast.
Oh, dear.
Do tell.
Oh, dear. Yes. Yes, where do I start? The highly respected technology journalist Leo Laporte in the United States, he had a live vodcast, video podcast, which was running, and there was Mike Arrington, who's another well-respected technology journalist. Some people love him, some people hate him, but he had him on his program, and they were talking...
He blogs for TechCrunch.
He does blog for TechCrunch, Mike Arrington, and... they Leo and Mike and another couple of guests, they were talking about the upcoming release of the Palm Pre, and Mike Arrington asked Leo Laporte if the model he got, he'd purchased outright, or if it was a loan model.
I have a Pre.
I don't have a Pre.
Are you happy with it?
Love it.
It's why?
Quite, it's quite impressive. Well, you know, I thought that maybe...
Hold on. Did you pay for the Pre? Like, let's get the disclosures out of the way right away.
This is a one-week review unit. I couldn't get one, and unfortunately, I don't think I'll be able to get... I was going to go out and get one this afternoon.
Okay, so you got a free Pre. You're one of the very few people that got a free review.
Not at all. I think there are quite a few reviewers.
Yeah, Scoble has one, too.
Mike, that's BS, and I'm really off that you would imply that in some way that this free, quote, free Pre that I send back in 7 days would in any way predispose me. Mike, you are such a troll. I'm not kidding.
I don't think he's being serious.
I'm being very serious, Mike. That's bull. I'm infuriated that you would imply that because I have a review unit that would somehow influence me. I'm throwing you all off. I'm not kidding. I'm done. We're going into reruns.
Yep. That's the biggest dummy spit I've ever heard
it
on radio.
It is what
for
Australians call a dummy spit. Now, look, it's a valid point that's being raised here, and that is the impartiality of a journalist. If they are provided with a product to review, how objective is the review going to be? Now, people who know Leo Laporte know that he's extremely objective. He's very well respected, and he's always very independent. But
it'd be interesting to go back and see how many negative reviews he's given products and things like that.
Well, it would be interesting to see that. The issue, though, is that I think he's overreacted for somebody who wants... Who purports to be a professional, and he is a professional, but it was a nasty sort of question, and it was sort of having a dig at his integrity, but I think that his reaction was over the top. I mean, I'm not him. I wasn't sitting in the seat and the chair that he was sitting in, but I don't think I would... I hope I wouldn't respond that way and just lose it to the point that I shut down the program and just suddenly switch to reruns because I can't deal with my guests anymore.
There's two sides to that, though. I mean, one is that, yes, highly respected journalistic standards... could have handled it better. But the other thing is that people who are in that position and who do have a reputation to maintain and they act as professionals and are meticulous about acting in a professional way, do get angry when you question their professionalism. When you say, look, you might have done something wrong, that can really upset people who make a point of doing the right thing.
The thing is now, this has now tarnished their reputation. Regardless of who's right, who's wrong, where it comes from, where it goes to, the spat will be remembered.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate.
That is unfortunate, yeah, is. Part the whole sort of thing. So, yeah, you can certainly catch up with, as the guys are alluding to on the chat.
Is Adam Turner in the chat room at the minute?
He is. Now, Adam raises a good point. He said it's not a freebie unit, which I probably said a few moments ago. It's a loaner.
Yeah, they have to give it back a week after he gets it.
They do have to give it back. There was an issue that I think that the other guy raised was that, yes, it might be a loan unit, but the manufacturers rarely chase people up if they're not returned. But in Leo Laporte's defence, he always says that if he gets a loan unit, he does return it, and then he goes and buys one if he likes it, or he refuses to accept freebies or loaners and he just buys them outright so that this sort of situation is avoided. But
we do the same here. Remember, I think last year we had some hard drives that we gave away because they were given to us and we talked about them.
We passed them on to the listeners instead of keeping them for us. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's the integrity that you need. So where to from here for Leo? What's going to happen? Obviously, you might get a few more listeners next week, but...
one incident doesn't break somebody with a reputation and a background like that.
Now, a lot of people have stood up for him as well, saying that they're backing him all the way and that the question was out of line. I think it was. I think the question was out of line. I think Leo's reaction was a little bit over the top.
That's the thing I would say too.
But I understand, as Graham's saying, he's having his integrity publicly challenged, and that was his gut reaction, wasn't it?
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking all about Google, because Google's been doing lots. We've got waves, we've got squares, and flu. Apparently, Google's into the flu these days as well. So we'll take a break and we'll come back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating.
Very.
Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
My old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
I smoke. That's yeah. Right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Don't breathe this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You are indeed. Next week on Tech Talk Radio, we have our friend, our regular aviation correspondent coming in to have a chat to us, Mr. Mark Mayer.
Mark's coming back.
Now, Mark Mayer, for those of you who are not familiar with this particular gentleman, he was a commercial airline pilot with Qantas and flew 737s and any 7-something or others around the place, passenger airlines and stuff like that. And we're going to be talking a lot, I think, about what's happened at with the faithful, if that's the word, the Air France issue that's happened over the Atlantic Ocean.
That was horrible news during the week.
Yeah. Yes. When I spoke to him and invited him onto the program last week, I couldn't stop him talking about it and speculating about the different things, and it was a real eye-opener. And things like I learnt that aircraft flying at low altitudes burn up twice, if not three times, the amount of fuel.
Oof.
So as a result, anyway, lots to talk about next week. So be sure to tune in to Tech Talk Radio when we'll be talking to Mark Mayer, the retired Qantas pilot, and we'll be discussing all sorts of things that's been happening in the world of aviation in the last little bit.
Send your questions through in advance if you'd like to. You can post them on the forum at forum.techtalkradio.com.au or you can send them in via email.
What a good idea. Now, before we get on to Google, we'll touch briefly on a few other things. The Worldwide Developers Conference, the Apple one, is going to kick off very shortly in San Francisco, and it's all going to be webcast and stuff like that. Keep an eye on Twitter. It's trending already. WWDC.
Is that where Justin is tonight?
It could be. Yeah. Maybe that's the reason the camping was just an excuse. So for those of you who aren't aware, it's a public holiday here in Australia today. So, yes, he's off with the kids camping.
Some parts of Australia.
Really? Which parts aren't?
Not sure.
Okay, good. Glad I asked that. Now,
I might be wrong. Sorry.
One more step. Yes, the Queen's birthday, apparently. Anyway, one more thing before we go to Google. Windows 7, someone let the pricing slip. Best Buy's did actually let the pricing slip. Apparently, according to a memo that's been issued by this organisation and snaffled up by Engadget, they state that Best Buy's will start selling Windows 7 upgrades on the 26th of June. Which is not neither here nor there. We sort of knew that already. But the cost of it's going to be $49 US for Windows 7 Home Premium.
Home Premium.
Now, okay. This is all confusing stuff. I couldn't tell you what it's all about.
Because like Vista, there's going to be 47 different versions of it.
I was going to say that I hope that they learnt from the Vista pricing schmozzle and make it a little bit simpler.
Yeah, well, maybe not. Anyway, $49 for the home premium version, and the professional version, which I'm hoping that's going to be like Vista Ultimate.
Well, I wouldn't think so.
No?
No.
Okay. All right. Forget what I just said. Windows 7 Professional for $99.
Okay. But these, that's not too bad.
These offers apparently have time limits of some 16 days on it, so I don't know what that's all about. But we'll have to watch out what happens in our market over
pricing.
Here. Maybe. Maybe so.
And you can guarantee they'll be more expensive here.
Yes. you never know.
Yeah.
They haven't announced it. There's been no official announcing. This is just speculation based on what memos have come out by certain organisations, which are obviously gearing up to sell Windows probably last stance operating system before we all go cloud and based online and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, watch this space. All right, let's talk a little bit about Google, the internet juggernaut, Wave in particular. Now, we touched briefly on Wave last week. Wave being the collaborative email messaging.
Instant messaging
and
client.
I didn't really quite get it, and I still don't know whether I did.
Yeah, well, you're not alone, Graham. I have to go back and read things a couple of times before you actually work out what it's all about. But in essence, in a nutshell, what I think Google is going to try and do is take things into the Google empire and the Google cloud and make things a little bit easier for us. It's not going to replace... I don't think it's not going to replace email as we know it today, the spammy, lovely stuff that we get. It's just another way of collaborating. But having said that, The man who knows all will be able to tell us a little bit about what it's all about. Here's Adam Turner's view from the couch.
What is Google Wave? The red pill in hand, Google is offering to show us how deep the rabbit hole goes. Every now and then, someone develops a new way of thinking about an old problem. The boffins at Google, well, actually Lars and Jens Rasmussen, the Wachowski brothers of the web who brought us Google Maps, sat down and asked, what would email look like if we set out to invent it today? Their answer is Google Wave. If I had to define Google Wave in a word, that word would be collaboration. I don't think anyone would argue with that. Give me two words and I'd say collaboration dashboard. Beyond that, people's definitions start to vary. I've seen some people call Google Wave Twitter on crack or friend feed with benefits, while others see it as Lotus Notes on steroids or SharePoint for the rest of us. I think everyone sees Google Wave as something different because they're bringing their own preconceptions to it and then imposing their own wants on it. I sat in on the Google Wave demo at the New Sydney Googleplex recently, and I changed my definition of Google Wave 3 times in 30 minutes. I still don't think I've reached that moment where the camera pulls back from the naked Neo and you realise what the Matrix actually is. I remember swearing out loud in the cinema at that point. Google Wave is still in the late development stage, and Google will soon open it up to other developers so they can build services on top of it or integrate it into their own services, not dissimilar to the way developers have embraced Google Maps. It should be open to the public by the end of the year. If you take a look at the Google Wave interface, it doesn't look that dissimilar to the standard 3-panel layout used by most desktop email clients. What Google Wave does is combine email and instant messaging to create something that acts like both but is neither. It reminds me of the wave-particle duality theory used to explain the nature of light. Sometimes light behaves like a wave, sometimes it behaves like a particle, even though our basic understanding of the universe insists that light must be a wave or a particle. It's both, but it's neither. It's enough to bake your noodle. Now, Google Wave runs in a browser and is hosted by Google, similar to other services such as Gmail, although Google Wave uses an open protocol which will allow people to run their own Google Wave servers. Conversations in Google Wave are called waves. When you create a new wave, you can drag and drop other users' icons into the wave so they become part of the conversation. The new wave appears at the top of their Google Wave inbox, although the technology lets you interact with outsiders using methods such as email and, I think, RSS. Once you've started a wave, other participants can see what you're typing in real time, and they can also type in the wave. You can drag in extra content such as images, you can annotate the comments of others, or even change what others have written. You can also view previous versions and spin off sections into new waves. I think you can also alter different users' read-write access to different parts of the wave. Google Wave is obviously designed with real-time collaboration in mind, but when you log into Google Wave, you'll be notified of new waves which involve you, similar to new incoming emails. At this point, you can replay the wave to see how it developed as various users entered their input. Perhaps the best way to explain Google Wave, using terms that we're already familiar with, is that each wave is like a tiny wiki, which can be edited via a web interface using tools that act like instant messaging and email. Access to that wiki can be restricted, or it can be exposed to the web and embedded in other websites, again like Google Maps. I suspect Google Wave will eventually tie in with other Google services such as Google Docs, at which point it will take on a whole new level. There are already a few basic widgets built into Google Wave, known as extensions, making it easier to do things such as create RSS feeds or run online surveys. Third-party developers will provide a wealth of these mini applications to run on Google Wave. So, like Facebook, Google Wave will move from being merely a service to being a platform. That's a game changer right there. Google Wave won't change the world overnight. I suspect you'll still be able to receive content in your Google Wave inbox via traditional methods such as instant messaging, email, and RSS, along with feeds from sites such as Twitter and Facebook. This would turn Google Wave
into a mega client, letting you create your own mashups to present you with the content you want from the sources you want in the form you want it. No wonder some people consider Google Wave the new friend feed, but that's missing the big picture. The obvious applications for Google Wave are collaborating as part of a business or in social networking, although the two are no longer mutually exclusive. Anyone who has used clunky and expensive business-grade collaboration and project management tools will easily see the potential for Google Wave. From a social media perspective, Google Wave would let you create a blog that behaves like a wiki. Blog posts, forum threads, chat rooms, wikis, and newsletters could all actually be publicly exposed waves, which people could subscribe to and then see in their Google Wave inbox. Eventually, these different methods of disseminating information could fade into the background as waves become the actual content rather than merely the delivery method. At this point, instant messaging, email, and RSS will be irrelevant, as will blogs, forums, and wikis, because Google Wave will have achieved duality. It will be both a particle, as in the content, and a wave, as in the delivery method. It will be exciting to see how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Still not convinced.
Well, I don't know, as I said during while we were listening to that, there's probably people out there who may be listening to the show for the first time who maybe aren't tech savvy going, wikis, waves, what are these guys on about? What? It's enough to make your eyes glaze over, really, isn't it? But is that really the underlying thought of a way some people treat technology these days? And they just go, oh, well, we will if we have to, and adapt to it and
use
it.
Some people do.
I mean, I know people are still getting used to email, for goodness sakes.
Yes, well, I'm guessing those people are not going to be the first users of this system. All things to all men never quite works. It can't be everything. Those things are different because they need to be different, because they do a different job. To combine everything into one doesn't sound to me to be sensible. But to be fair, I haven't tried it, so.
Have you seen the demo? There's a video demo. If you go to wave.google.com,
okay.
Have a look.
Yeah, all right. I think I had half a look last time, but yeah. I'll have a proper look.
Yeah, it's about as muddy as the Yarra River, I think. But
oh, okay.
You keep watching it and you go, oh, I get it. And that's what Adam said in the beginning of his piece there. He changed his mind about it three times in 30 minutes. And it's that type of, oh, I get it. Mm.
What would have happened if Neo had taken both pills?
I don't know. You would have turned purple. Sorry, Dr. Ron's about
to... It's something I've never, ever, ever considered. What would have happened if you'd taken both pills? All right, enough with the Matrix analogies already. We've got freaks in the chat room who are reciting lines from the Fifth Element line for line as well.
Fantastic.
I'm one of them. But
and this whole concept of waves is a reference to Firefly, for those in the know.
Yes.
Good.
Come and chat to us, chat.techtalkradio.
Come and explain it to us, please.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Google is your friend, all right?
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. A lot of very confused people here. But anyway, whilst we're talking about Google, Google's got a new search function called Google Squared. Yes, just when you think it's safe to walk back into the web browser environment, here's another one.
Is it just a man in the middle for Bing?
I don't know.
So
Could be. But what this look, this is what Google Squared does. Apparently, it takes, like, let's say, for example, you search for roller coasters.
Yep.
It returns a gridded type result of different roller coasters and different heights and different speeds. That's using the company, what Google sort of say it does. But it sounds to me a little bit like Wolfram Alpha,
okay.
on some form of Google steroids.
Google's answer to Wolfram Alpha.
Yes.
Google Squared.
Yes.
Okay.
So with Wave, with Squared.
We're going to have to start scripting this show a bit more tightly because my head's starting to spin.
I know.
And I'm going to need hours to research what we're going to be talking about. Google.com/squared. Squared Labs. Roller coasters. All right, what happens if I click on roller coasters? Square it. Oh, building a square for roller coasters. Oh, it's building up like a sort of a table.
Exactly. Anyway, internet giant Google has introduced this new search feature called Google Squid, which collects facts and data organized into tables of information rather than returning the traditional search results, the one-liners that we're sort of otherwise accustomed to.
Okay.
The new feature, which the company says is still in beta, well, that's standard for Google, is designed to aggregate data that would have otherwise required visits to several different websites. So not unlike, I think this is the same model that Wolfram Alpha is being devised on. But obviously, Wolfram Alpha is more a scientific device than it is a general search engine. Well, that's my understanding of it anyway. I stand to be corrected if someone wants to.
Google Squared couldn't automatically build a square about Tech Talk Radio. But don't give up yet. Start a square by entering up to 5 example items. Oh, okay. Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Andrew.
Oh, here we go. We're going to work on live.
Oh. Square it. Do it. Do it now. Building a square. Oh, let's build a table this time. Okay, so it's got each... Oh, no, it sort of hasn't really worked how I thought it would.
Yeah, well, see, this is a thing everyone gets to play with a little bit, but maybe there's a specific requirement for it. Maybe you can put products and services in there. Maybe you can put buildings. Maybe you can put in objects and it'll give you tables of results, put colours into it and it mixes them all up. I don't know. Whatever it's going to do, but there's another option for you.
Got to have a think about that. Got to get my head around it.
Does the world need more search engines? Apparently so.
Just what I'm trying to grapple with Wave, and now we're looking at that. Okay.
Now, whilst talking about Google, as if you've heard the opening of the show, we've got a terrible flu that's floating around here in our town at the moment, and Google's going to trend that. You know, Google Trends, they like mapping trendy sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, you can look at the flu now on Google Trends.
Oh, good.
It's expanded flu trends, its online tracking influenza outbreaks to Australia and New Zealand. Google said it had built a flu model for the state of Victoria by working on its own search data and historical flu data from the Victorian Infectious Diseases Reference Laboratory. Google said in a blog post that when they extrapolated the model to produce flu models at a national and state level for the rest of Australia, so they can actually pull all the states apart and put them all in there in this one model types of Do we need to know where the flu is? I think that you just turn on any of the mainstream media at the moment you'll find it. Is it a good use of technology? Are we doing things because we can now? Is that what this is sort of saying to us?
Google were doing similar things when the devastating bushfires were happening here in Victoria.
Yeah.
And they were modelling and plotting where the fires were and the fire fronts, and they were making all that information publicly available in real time. It's probably a similar sort of thing.
Mm.
Yeah, I think they're trying to do something useful. I'm not sure in this case how useful it is, but yeah.
All right, and finally this evening in our Google News, it's a sad note, actually, that Rajiv Motwani, who was one of the founding mentors for Google, Larry and Serge,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately passed away. He died at the age of 47 during the course of the week. He was drowned.
Oh, dear.
Mm. Yeah, so, it's a sad time because when those people are instrumental in developing the world's search engine into what it is today, that's rather sad.
Mm.
All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, Andrew McComb here this evening. You can come and visit us on our chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come and say good day to us wherever you might be listening to us, whether you're listening to us live in New Zealand, whether you're listening to us in Melbourne, or if you're listening to us on delay on the podcast or something, send us an email because we like getting those and we read them out during the course of next week. Anyway, we'll take a break. Back with more in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Do you Twitter? We do. Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au. to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting.
Right.
We've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, good. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening.
Hello.
Just a reminder, next week we've got Mark Mayer coming in to talk aeroplanes. He's a Qantas pilot. We're going to be talking about Air France and all those sort of
air safety and how things go on, yeah.
So come and have a listen to us and ask questions. Just had a phone call during the break from Rod, I think it was, wanting to know about Macintosh security software. Graham, got any clues for putting on your Mac yet? Maybe this is a question for JD, who's not here this week.
It really is a question for JD, and we might take it on notice and perhaps get an answer next week.
Yep, let's do that.
For the caller. Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. I'm doing a bit of a Google around, but I'm not sure that I'm getting useful information. Yeah,
Mac guru, even Adam Turner's probably got something there on the chat. He might come up with something shortly. But yeah, that's a very valid question in this e-security week that we currently have here in Australia, thanks to the federal government. What do you put on your Mac to keep your... things safe and sound?
Mm.
Good question.
Mac OS is probably one answer, yes.
Well, maybe. Anyway, let's talk about social networking. Twitter, for example. Everyone's now familiar with the short messaging service Twitter, aren't we? We all tweet in here. It's bastardized English language like most new technologies have.
Mm-hmm.
We have new words, thank you. But that'd be interesting one night to get a linguist in or whoever the person is to sort of talk to us about
any linguist will talk about how it's not bastardizing the language.
It's just evolving, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a natural development of a language.
Anyway, Twitter, there's a lot of fake people out there. Have you seen the fake Dr. Ron Twitter account?
Oh, no.
There's one out there. I want to subscribe. Yeah, it's up there with the fake Senator Conroy, the fake
Conroy.
Today Tonight account.
Fake ASIO.
I thought that was real.
No, that's not real.
Are you telling me that Adam's being followed by a fake ASIO account?
Adam might be being followed by ASIO, but they won't be using an account name that says ASIO.
Oh, you've just spoiled it all for me. I was living the dream there for a moment, Dr. Ron.
There's that wonderful sense of illusion. You're in a happy place. Yes. Well, I'm sorry to have done that to you. But there are fake Twitter accounts, but these fake Twitter accounts are going to be against Twitter's acceptable use policy, surely.
That's correct. Impersonation violates Twitter's terms of service. And apparently they're taking it seriously. They suspend, delete, or transfer control of the accounts known to be impersonalization. Now, I think in the press recently, the New South Wales Police Department was also the victim of a impersonator. Heaven forbid. And they actually managed... Well, they tracked people, the person down, the alleged person, who was the culprit of creating the fake New South Wales Police Department Twitter account and knocked on their door and said, "Can we have it, please?" And I don't think it took much for him to give it away. But that's the sort of level that what's going on at the moment. And Twitter are going to start clamping down on it a little bit. So watch this space. Verified accounts are coming shortly. How that becomes verified, maybe it's a bit like PayPal verified, where you provide them your bona fides and they say, yeah, they give you a big tick so that you know that if this is going to be Stephen Conroy, then it's the real Stephen Conroy or the real Dr. Ron or the real whoever it might be that you're following.
They were going to have something akin to a tick in the top part of your screen if you go to the blue site, going to subscribe to it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's going to have an authenticated tick there to say that this person is legitimate.
Yeah, be good. Anyway, because there's a lot of that around. And I think it is fun. Like, I follow a few fake accounts and they are very humorous. Some of the people are very good at what they do. But then again, you can sort of see the if people aren't quite that way informed and they're following someone who is a bit too good at doing what they do, they might get the wrong impression.
Mm.
So I think Stephen Conroy was offering to have drinks at some bar in Melbourne the other night, so I thought, there's a giveaway. some other interesting Twitter news as well, which I was going to try and talk on. It says he's trying to find the piece. Oh, here we go. Superchirp. Have you heard of Superchirp?
No.
Well, apparently Superchirp is a new service, which is nothing really related to Twitter, but it's actually going to let people start making money off their Twitter streams. If you tweet relevant information and the people who follow you believe that it's worth spending money on. This new service actually uses the direct messaging component of Twitter to actually allow people to receive direct tweets. So rather than tweeting it into the general timeline, you would tweet it to
which,
your direct.
Which anyone can watch.
Yeah, you would tweet into the direct thing, and then your paying customers will only get the tweet that you're tweeting.
So you're sending direct messages to who have subscribed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why would you subscribe, Graham?
If they're tweeting anyway, can't you get that without having to subscribe?
Not a direct tweet.
You can if it goes into the public timeline, but if you send someone a direct message, it's only seen by the recipient.
Oh, okay.
So the proposal is, from what I understand, you pay me $1 a month or $10 a year, whatever the fee is, I don't know, and I would run a business where I would send you traffic updates every half hour.
Okay.
But I'd send them to you as a direct message.
Uh-huh.
Which you pay to receive.
Okay.
And what they're doing is using the Twitter network to do the message distribution.
It. Okay, yep.
It's a great concept.
It is.
It'd be interesting to see what people would be prepared to pay for, what sort of news or updates people would be prepared to pay to receive.
Well, the example that they're using here in Superchirp was some of the more popular people who get followed, such as Britney Spears. You know, she's got something like 1.7 million Twitter followers. And even if they all tweet it up for, you know, $10 a month, well, I think it doesn't take rocket science to do the maths there, does it?
Twitter's not going to get a cent of that revenue,
No,
though.
They're not. This is where Superchirp is going to do very well out of it.
30% of it. The subscriber, content provider will get 70% of it. And, yeah, Twitter gets nothing. The subscribers get the content. You'd assume, though, that maybe on a Twitter account like that people are following, that maybe you'd only get 10 or 20% of those that are following for free would actually follow if they had to pay.
Yeah.
But even so, that might add up to a fair bit of cash.
It would. Doesn't take rocket science to do the maths on that one. In other interesting news too, you know, the eBay and you know, how they're all sort of breaking up the company now, and Skype and all those sort of things. You see that a lot of the things in the eBay shopping carts, such as call this person on Skype, they're all disappearing now. It's becoming starting to be pulled apart.
They're separating it out again.
Yeah. I think they call it asset stripping in the corporate world. I don't know what they call it in the online world. But I thought, that's quite interesting. All the Skype out and all the Skype-y sort of stuff is starting to disappear now on eBay. Mm. So
I think it'll probably be a good thing if they separate eBay from PayPal again, because I think that's a combination that isn't quite as healthy as it ought to be.
Why is that?
I don't know, just the duplication of fees and the fact that PayPal and eBay are the same company and yet they act,
the way they work
together. Yeah.
Maybe. I'd be interested to see what others seem to think about it.
Yeah, I've got muck on the pluck with eBay and PayPal, and the amount of money that you actually pay to sell things.
I haven't heard
things,
that before, muck on the pluck.
It's very, very frustrating. I've been using eBay quite a lot lately, and they just claw and gouge away. I mean, I know that I don't have to use them if I don't want to, but it's just a convenient way of selling things and getting payments quite easily.
Yeah, but when you make a, you know, PayPal force you to use, or eBay more or less force you to use PayPal.
You have to have PayPal as a payment method, yes.
And then PayPal take their cut and eBay
cha-ching,
also take their cut.
Cha-ching.
And yet then you realise that PayPal and eBay are really the same company.
Cha-ching.
So you're paying the same people twice.
And then you want to convert from a magic PayPal dollars and transfer it back into a bank account.
And
cha-ching.
They pay you, yep, charge again, yep.
It's, yes, it can be an expensive venture.
Mm.
But what's the alternative? I don't know if there is a viable alternative. Everyone is... eBay is so entrenched, isn't it?
If PayPal and eBay weren't sort of so tightly intertwined, then maybe there'd be competitors. There'd be other payment methods other than PayPal that would be usable.
The ACCC let it through.
Mm. Yeah.
They're allowed to do what they do.
They do. They let all sorts of mergers through.
Vote with your feet, I suppose. But
okay.
Where do you go?
Dr. Ron, I'd like to draw your attention to item 34 on the rundown. It's all yours, baby.
Oh, okay. Let me find... Is it a rundown? Hang on a minute. Item 34. I mean goal for email. Oh, no, jail for emails. Oh, yes. Yes. Now, this is almost a...
It's rehearsed.
It is. A finely polished and finely tuned, well-rehearsed program.
Okay. Oh, you're not getting online,
have
are you?
A copy of the rundown.
No. I've got my notes here. Now, a mother of two young children has been jailed in Indonesia for defaming a hospital through an email that she sent to friends. I was almost going to save this up as a
It sounds a bit odd spot-ish, doesn't it?
But it's a bit too serious to be an odd spot. The lady sent an email to some friends and she complained about the service she received at a hospital near Jakarta in Indonesia. In the email, she said that she accused the hospital of fraud, so fighting words there, because she was refused access to her medical records to clarify a disputed diagnosis. The Omni, which runs the hospital, yes, Omni International Hospital, they took legal action, resulting in prosecutors charging her with criminal defamation offences, which could send her to jail for up to 6 years. She's already been in prison for 3 weeks ahead of a court appearance. And
just because they wouldn't give her a... She said, after she lost the civil case.
Yeah, because she's not in jail because she didn't get a record. She's in jail because she said things to other people that obviously she couldn't back up in court. You can't make statements that harm another organisation's or another person's reputation.
Libelous or whatever the
word
is.
Yeah.
It is libelous.
If you can't back them up.
So for somehow the hospital, the health group there got a hold of the emails. They took umbrage with her comments and thought that they had, yes, incurred damages and loss because of what she'd said, and took legal action against her. And as a result, she was imprisoned.
That'll do it.
Crikey.
That'll do it. There's a few people in town that I won't name names or mention anything, but the same sort of way, say things in court which aren't quite true, and it catches up with you, doesn't it?
Human rights groups and 16,000 supporters have joined an online campaign.
Oh, dear.
Demanding her release.
Look, on one hand, this does sound like an overreaction on the part of the hospital and the authorities in Indonesia. On the other hand, it's yet another case of the fact that the same laws that apply in real life apply online. You can't go around doing things online that you would get in trouble for doing in other places. You need to be careful. And when you're in places like, you know, Indonesia, anywhere where you're not familiar with, you just need to be kind of aware of the local laws.
Absolutely. Dr. On, item 36, Vodafone announces an Android price.
Yes, we were talking about the Android operating system a little bit earlier
on
the program.
Yeah. If you missed it, rewind.
Vodafone has announced its pricing for the new HTC Magic. Now, the HTC Magic is the replacement to the HTC Dream, which is the handset that I've got. We've spoken about the Magic extensively already. The new touchscreen mobile offers customers exclusive Vodafone features and will be
available. Do they have them?
Yep, and will be available for free on a $69 per month 2-year
contract.
Do you know
what they are? Sorry, I'm just not a Vodafone customer, so I don't know what they are. Serious question. Do you know what other features would Vodafone offer?
What they're talking about there, I think, is... Now, Adam was talking about this on the last View from the Couch, not this week's one, last week's one. I think the device is going to be available on Vodafone and 3. From what Adam was saying last week, I think, and you'll correct me in the chat room if I'm wrong, Vodafone were going to offer online upgrades of the operating system and online features. If you get an HTC Magic on 3, those sorts of upgrades won't be available online. You have to do them by connecting the device to a computer and doing them with software locally. So it's more support, software support advantages going through Vodafone.
I know that with Blackberries and things, one of my colleagues in the office has a Blackberry, and you have to log on and do everything through the web portal. Tad frustrating. You can't even log in locally or, you know, set up your POPs or your SMTPs or your IMAPs. But hey, what can I say? That's a system that they use at Vodafone.
Apparently, you can also only get the white version from Vodafone.
Really?
Okay. That's what it says here.
That's right. Yeah, white version. So there you go, $69 per month on a 2-year contract. I reckon that's pretty good.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Internet Explorer 8 officially came out of beta during the course of the week.
Images depicting a man vomiting outside a London pub were removed from the site.
Give it a try if you haven't.
I got stuck by our own spam filter.
Yeah, it's good like that. It works well.
There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
With many years with experience.
Entertaining.
You're an idiot. It's only 3 words.
Informative.
These new hard drives are all solid state.
Independent.
They need constant poking.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tricky thing, the English language.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening, talking all sorts of things technologically, sort of speaking-wise. Well, let's talk a little bit more about spam, just because it's the Australian government's, you know, e-awareness, or, you know, awareness week at the moment. When it comes to things like passwords, have you changed your password lately? Just be aware online what you're doing. And
the Commonwealth Bank is getting a pounding at the moment.
Pussy's bow.
They are getting smashed.
The thing is, one of the things I did during the course of the week, just because out of curiosity, one of the domains, you know, because when you send an email, it comes from a domain name. It was something like combank-netbank.com.au or something like that, something bizarre. Anyway, through the tools available to me, I decided to check it out and see who the domain was registered to.
Yeah, yep.
And it was a .com domain, and I guess the aliases were all hidden, because there's a couple of companies out there which just basically you can hide behind this anonymity, wall of anonymity. It's an American company, obviously, where free speech and liberty and extortion go hand in hand.
The problem is trying to shut down the operators of these domain names. They've probably been set up, or most definitely they will have been set up automatically.
Well, the registrar for this one was Melbourne IT.
Or Melbourne IT would probably not be aware that it was hosting that domain or that it had been responsible.
But the other thing is that it might be a legitimate domain. Just because it says that after the @ sign on the email doesn't mean that's where it came from.
It was a legitimate domain. It had been registered the day before I got the spam.
Right.
So they'd set up the domain, and if you went to the page, there was, and I looked at it because you could see it when you go to domain tools, it actually shows you what the domain looks like on the right-hand side, and it looked like a NetBank login.
They are using legitimate domains, Graham, like combank.com.au, which is a legitimate domain.
Yeah.
They are also using domains which they've set up, which are just garbage, like thecommonwealth.org combnk.com.
Okay.
And things, you know, and...
And they're using those as the links that they link to as well, I see.
They're using those as the links they link to, and they're using them as from names. But you're right, you can put anything as a from name, can't you?
That's right, yeah.
You can have Graham at whatever domain name you like,
links.
.com.
And it's the links that they try to make you click to.
But the other thing is
that
you can...
Which are the tricky things. You just hover over those and it should show you.
But again, you can make it appear like you can have whatever text you like in a link, but you click on that and you can be taken anywhere, can't you?
You can, yes. But, if that site is actually hosting a fake login page that's collecting details, then...
Oh, yeah, but you go to domain tools and it'll tell you exactly what, where and how and why. Like, these sites were in the United States, hosted on American servers, registered here in Australia the day before.
That would be the next question, is where they hosted, yeah.
But the thing that really got my hackles up during the course of the week, which we alluded to in the news on the program, is the fact that there's telemarketing companies getting in on the act now.
That's interesting. If they're putting... Sorry, Dr. Ron, go on.
No, I was going to say, this is nasty. They're saying, we value your information privacy and your online security. We would never request anything via email.
So call us.
So to verify your account information, please call us now on 1300...
Blah, blah, blah.
Yada, 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 yada. And people ring up and actually ring a pirate bogus call centre, and they say, oh, thanks very much for calling us. Can I just get your name and your date of birth and your password? And the poor unsuspecting people say, oh, yeah, well, it's this.
Well, that has to be traceable.
Oh, absolutely it does.
That has to be easily traceable.
If it's being done here, yes, if it's being done in this country, it would be. If it's going offshore somewhere...
Well, to have a 1300 number, there has to be someone in this country that's paying the bill for that number.
Well, not necessarily.
Well, if it's a 1300 number, it has to be set up here somehow.
Yeah,
it's part of our dialing plan, then someone has to be responsible for something here. Yeah, but it could be being answered overseas. It could be getting trucked off to another country.
There'd still have to be someone you could go after for that.
Yeah, yep.
You couldn't set it up otherwise.
The Commonwealth Bank said that they are obviously taking the situation very, very seriously because of the sheer volume of the Commonwealth Bank spam that is around at the moment.
Why are they picking on the Commonwealth Bank? Is it because they're the biggest or because they're a soft target?
I'd imagine it would be just because they're the biggest.
And they've got a good name. They've got a very well-known name. Everybody knows the Commonwealth Bank.
But I've also noticed that everyone else's anti-spam stuff has dropped off. I haven't seen a PayPal one for ages. I haven't seen any other. I saw St. George recently in a spam.
There you go.
But that was about the only one. Everything else has dropped off.
Maybe Commonwealth Bank customers are more gullible. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that
we've all seen them from all different banks.
It was interesting that they've set up this telemarketing number in Queensland because I believe statistics prove that Queensland's a good hot a soft target, I guess, for these type of people. Is what I'm trying to say.
In terms of the telephone number, Adam Turner in the chat has raised a very good point. The calls could be diverted through a hijacked PABX, or what the Americans would call a PBX. And That does happen. That's very common, and it's a little known.
So what happens? Someone dials in and hacks and reprograms.
Absolutely. The PABXs, the telephone systems, are networked. They can either be accessed via a telephone interface, or they can be accessed via the internet. And you can set up your own numbers, and you can divert them in software, and you can do all this, and you can actually hack in. And I've had first-hand experience of disinfecting, if you like, PABXs which have been hacked into, and this sort of things
disinfect
happen.
Disinfect a PABX.
Well, you have to go through it.
Not with a Dettol.
Well, it's like loading anti-spyware software on a computer. You have to go through and make sure that all of the diversions and phone numbers and everything that's in place in the numbering plan is legitimate.
Hmm.
Yeah, interesting. It's. I suppose that's one possibility. Even so, there'd have to be some link somewhere that somebody can track.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You're getting so much of this stuff, and it's being bombarded. And of course, the answer you're going to get from the bank is, "Yeah, we're working on it. We're going to try and sort it out." But what's actually happening? No one seems to know. And as soon as they get rid of one, another one pops up.
The bank are going to go to the police, and the police are going to say, "Oh, well, it's going to this company, but they're not doing it. It's being redirected somewhere else." And yeah.
The Commonwealth Bank have said that they are working closely with the Australian Federal Police and the Australian High Tech Crime Centre to try to solve the problem and try to track down the culprits. I don't know what level of success they're having. The spokesperson from the Commonwealth Bank that made the media release during the week was not very optimistic. I think he said in the media release that they might be winning the battle in the short term, but he really didn't think they were actually going to win the war.
Mm.
So
a big spam server, remember McColo, the big spam server that was shut down a while and then all the spam disappeared and came back again?
Yeah.
Well, they got another one the other day, the shutdown of the Pricewort internet service provider, ISP. Those people that serve it, obviously they have a dodgy system going. Anyway, it looks like they're unlikely to have the same effect as what the McColo closure did last year. So they're trying to actually get out there and shut these ISPs or down that are harbouring these spam bots, spam servers, I guess. But it needs to be an attempt right across all organisations to do that. Otherwise, we'll end up with the same. Wave will fix a few of these problems if we all start moving into that environment, won't it?
No, I don't think so necessarily, because Wave is just going to be like an aggregation.
Oh, so it's going to pull it all together for it, is it?
It's going to pull it all together. You're still going to have the transport, so you're still going to have the mechanisms behind email and instant messaging and IP communications. I think Wave's just going to be an interface.
On a lighter note, one of the people that I follow on Twitter is John Cleese, the well-known...
Is it a fake John Cleese?
No, it's a real John Cleese. Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, he's just released a new book and stuff like that, which he was tweeting about the other day. But he's also starting his own Nigerian scam in the way John Cleese can do it. And you had to sign up for this mail. This is all very in-house and stuff. Very legit.
Right.
Sign up, but it was also very funny. But just goes to show that even the comedians are out there having a go at sort of upstaging a lot of these spammers and scammers and things like that these days. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll come back with the Oddspot gadget and website of the week after this.
Software and Succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No.
Do you block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep. Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffany, techie, propeller head, Vicky.
Independent.
So SMS is not a on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And if you get Inga from Sweden showing her wares.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
I'm not sure whether this is a gadget or an odd spot. Maybe it's a gadget that needs to go into the odd spot. But
right.
When this came across the Ethernet during the course of the week, I just had to stop and laugh and go, why? Anyway, the makers of... Panasonic, the people who make DVDs and all those sorts of things.
Yes.
On June the 1st, 2009, they officially launched a Blu-ray player. Now, nothing unusual about launching a Blu-ray player, but this is a Blu-ray player that's a small, portable, 8.9-inch Blu-ray player designed for a desktop-type application, as in, you know the things you can put in a car and you put them on the bench at work. And
like you used to be able to buy portable DVD players.
Yeah, a little $200 portable DVD players. Anyway, there's a Blu-ray one come out now.
Oh, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you've got to ask why. I don't know the answer to why, but It's purely speculative, but at the price of $800 US, you've got to ask why.
Well, you might have your movie on Blu-ray, and you want to play it. What's wrong with that?
It's an expensive way of doing things. But yeah, you're right, Graham. You're right. On the money. In case you wanted to watch your movie on a little... Just download it off the stream or something like that.
Yeah, but otherwise... But that's the point. Otherwise, if you've got your collection in Blu-ray, what are you going to do? You're going to go out and buy the same movie again on DVD to play on your
portable
DVD player?
Anyway, so there you go. The DMPB15, if you really need to know what it is, Google it. It's got 5.1 surround sound, high-def video, all on an 8.9-inch screen. Maybe I'm missing the point. Maybe
1024x600.
Yeah, exactly. You go and buy one of those. And
80 pixels by 80 pixels.
That's the one.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
The website of the week. We've been talking about Google search engine. We've been talking about the new Microsoft Bing search engine. This website, I've just posted it in the chat room and I'll put it in the show notes. It's a little bit of a convoluted one. Bear with me. blackdog.ie/google-bing/search.php. This is a website that provides a search box. You can type in a search query and it will display results in two panes side by side. You have a Google pane and a Bing pane. So you can compare the results.
Get an ointment for that.
A nasty Google pane and I've got a...
Get a rash?
Yes, shooting Bing pane. Now, you can compare the results from the search engines side by side. So we're talking earlier about, you know, if we search for this, I would get the nice results in Google, but I don't get the same results in Bing, and I want to compare them. Use this feature, blackdog.ie/google-bing/search.php. I know it's a long and convoluted website, but I'll put it in the notes so you can have a play around. See how the indexing compares with the two sites. You get a bit of a feel for how Bing is working, or not working, as the case may be.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
It is the Odd Spot. A war on piracy is more important than a right to privacy. That's difficult to say. A Swiss court has ruled that an anti-piracy tracking company can continue monitoring the public on the internet. The court has said that the need to fight illicit file sharers outweighs the need to protect an individual's privacy on the internet, and that the end justifies the means.
Oh, yeah.
In January 2008, infamous anti-piracy tracking outfit Logistep was criticised by Swiss data protection commissioners for helping to breach the privacy of people on file-sharing networks. Logistep, which track file sharers all over Europe, was given 30 days to stop collecting data or face further action. It's taken a while, but according to a TSR report, the Federal Administrative Court has come to a decision, one which sees it overrule the Federal Data Protection Commissioner's decision of 2008. The court said that monitoring and data harvesting activities continued by Logistep raise privacy concerns, since the individuals it monitors have no idea what data is being harvested and stored about them. However, despite these worries, the court's decided that privacy concerns are trumped by the needs of the anti-piracy company, noting that a legal basis is not required for them to operate, since they operate exclusively in the private sphere.
I'm glad you've sorted that out now, Dr. Ron. That's amazing, really. It's not akin to what I think Senator Conroy was taking to task over in relation to the spam filter here in this country.
All
anyway, that's another story.
Yes,
you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Next week, don't forget to join us live in the studio when we have Qantas airline pilot. Going to be talking about flying these big things in the sky. We're going to be talking about Air France and all sorts of stuff like that. So be sure to join us then. Until then, have a good week and we'll see you all next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show.
Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.